the kicks we can.
CITR 101.9 Vancouver.
It makes you feel real big.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Fun!
While
Fun
cloaks itself in a plethora of disguises, its favorite mantle still remains
Fun. Fun
devours all it touches, its voracious appetite rarely fulfilled. Yet
Fun
doesn't only destroy, it creates and molds as well. Let's examine closely then this dangerously evil creation, this new breed. But a word of caution, handle with care and don't drop your guard. This rapacious new breed prowls both alone and in packs, operating at any level, any time, anywhere, and with anybody. Who are they?
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised. You've dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan.
We've landed in the box. It's our favorite place to be, isn't it, Ms. Julia?
Oh, we love it here.
We do. If you're listening for the first time or you're a long-term listener, you've landed in Juicebox Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you're one of our podcast listeners, but however you decide to spend the hour with us, we are always glad to have you, Ms. Julia Saunders and Caroline McGillivray. We're here hosting for the hour and having a great time, and we're going to talk about a lot, and you're going to learn a little bit and have a lot of fun doing it.
Well, we hope so. I think tonight will be an informative discussion, sort of branching off from last week around Harvey Milk and his work with GLBT rights, which are human rights, and some that we are actually losing today in our very country here in Canada. And we're going to be, because of the importance of this going on, that Harvey Milk's the movie is out, we want to show support and continue the conversation tonight. But we're going to be talking more from a youth perspective. We were discussing pride last week in regard to human rights, but often people aren't really in a place of celebrating their gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered selves with going to something like pride when they're young, because they're just learning about who they are or what they are, and including what and who they are as a sexual or a gender minority, which can be difficult, as you could probably imagine. So, you know, homophobia and bullying are very serious issues facing today's youth, and particular, I think, queer youth. So we've invited out in schools, and our guest tonight is Ross Johnstone. Welcome.
Thank you.
And he's the director of youth education for Out in Schools and Out on Screen. And we're going to be talking to Mr. Johnstone tonight about all this stuff and what is going on with Out in Schools, how it grew, and also about the climate around youth and GLBT issues, the politics, and really the human rights that we're fighting for even today. So we thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. It's okay. Great.
And we're also going to be here. Thank you. We're very glad to have you. And we're going to be taking calls tonight, too, because some of our callers might want to have some questions to ask you. So if you do have some questions, you can call in, or you can just call in and tell us how much you love our show at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. So welcome, Ross.
Thank you.
So our first question, I think, is really, we want to know in your opinion, because you're so sort of immersed in this, climate.
Expert.
The climate, yes. And around youth and GLBT issues. So what do you feel is the current climate of going on?
A good question. A hard place to start, because there's the climate today, how it is, which is not perfect. And as you mentioned, you know, we go forward, but we can also slip back. And that's if we're talking about policy or just value, community values, that sort of thing. But then in comparison, I think, to the past, indeed, we're ahead of the game. And then you could break that down a little bit into, with regard to my job and the subject today, and with regard to maybe even neighborhoods and where you live and different school boards and different even provinces and their policies with regard to the climate or the situation that affects the climate, I should say. I'd say the climate now amongst youth in schools is fairly positive. But with that said, there's still a huge issue with homophobia, with students not really making the link to bullying based on sexual orientation, putting that on the same level as something, say, like racism or even sexism, and not sort of making an association between those two. You know, it's all discrimination, and I'm not sure people are totally making that comparison yet. Some are, for sure. But on the big picture, there's still a lot of work to do.
I think there probably is.
And we're doing a great job doing that work.
Well, we'll be talking more about what Out in Schools is doing. And first, I want to talk a little bit about this rally that went on.
Sure.
Now, for people that are listening internationally, which we often have a lot of international listeners, we had a rally, and I'll have Ross explain what happened about it and what it was about. So go ahead and explain that, and then we're going to ask some questions about it.
Great, thanks. The rally was really important, and I think a really successful rally as well. And it actually comes right out of your first question regarding climate. So what we have is, in BC, we have a curriculum that's prescribed by the Ministry of Education, and not included in any mandatory curriculum is anything about LGBT issues, gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered issues. Students are not talking about it. They're not being taught about those issues, and in a sense, that's affecting the climate in the schools. When you don't talk about stuff, nothing's going to be solved, really. Mm-hmm. So what did come around was a course called Social Justice 12, an optional course for grade 12 students, two other very important factors, that dealt with a whole bunch of issues that were related to social justice, and included in that course is a unit on LGBT issues. Now, it's a new course. It was piloted last year in four or six districts, and it went well. And, of course, now school boards across the province are welcome to pick up the course. And not all have done so yet, but timing is really that issue. But Abbotsford was the district that came out against the course and specifically outlining the GLBT content as controversial and not part of their community values in Abbotsford. Mm-hmm. They did say that they would offer the course if that unit was taken out. So that's the scandal, I think, with a lot of people who do the work I do. And just, I think, the community at large. I do think that we are an open-minded community, generally speaking, and the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So this is what charged this rally in Abbotsford. What's really important about the rally, more than the fact that it just happened, is that it was student-led, youth-run. There was one girl in Abbotsford who got on Facebook and decided to make a fuss about this. It was against her rights. It was against her individuality and against her beliefs, and put this all together, and of course had help from other organizations as the momentum grew. So it happened, it was a success, it was really important that it happened. So climate-wise, what was positive about that rally is that there were so many youth there really actively protesting the Abbotsford School District's decision, and they were being backed up by GAYLBC, Gay and Lesbian Education of BC, the BC Teachers Federation, and the Ministry of Education, Vancouver School Board, etc., you name it. So, Abbotsford didn't look too good in this rally when it came to the school district, that is. The town, however, and the support that rallied behind it was terrific, and I think unexpected from a lot of people in the city.
What was the result?
Yeah.
What
was the result?
What was the result? I don't have the exact numbers, the turnout. It felt like about 500 people or so on a very rainy Saturday.
Cold,
rainy Saturday where at the last minute, from what I understand,
That's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people out in Abbotsford. there was a bus chartered here in Vancouver to go out there through Pride and out on screen, the organization I work for, and the LGBT Center as well. And that got some folks out. But rainy, and at the last minute, the city had to change the starting point even. So there's so many factors that were hurdles in this thing being pulled off. We got there. It was organized really well. Mm. The ending point was at the university in Abbotsford, and they had great speakers that had a whole bunch of good things to say. Lots of signs, lots of flags, balloons, dogs, everyone.
Dogs, great. Love it.
The dogs were there. The dogs were proud.
Well, I think, you know, it's amazing to me that the school board could say such a broad sweeping statement as not that this curriculum is not part of our community values, as if, you know, certain parts of any part of the world would have no people that were of an LGBT, you know, preference or whatever it is. I don't know how to sort of word that, but, you know, sexual preference, gender expression, that kind of thing. I think it's really quite a broad sweeping statement that I found very disturbing when we had our guest last week about that. And
sure.
And how, you know, these youth, I think, so important that they're standing up for the rights of everyone to have their freedoms. I think that's really the main crux of the message.
I agree. I think it's really exciting that youth realize that they can take matters and change things in the world using things like social media, like Facebook as tools, and that people are there, they listen, even in different cities like Vancouver, where they're willing to come and help and stand up and fight. So it takes one person to start something, and with that, 500 people ended up there, and I'm sure there were a lot of other people who probably tried, and with all the changes,
absolutely,
sure.
there definitely was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in our program, we really reinforce technology and media, as you just mentioned, as a way to make a difference. You can use it. Art is activism, and it's a form of activism that's really successful. And it can be as simple as having a lot of really decorative signs or something more avant-garde or more complex. Either way, students, you know, can learn that art, film, theater, whatever, is a really great way to get their message across, especially when it's somebody young in their teens against an authority that has been elected or whatever the case. And I should say that in Abbotsford, the youth that were there were gay, were lesbian, were straight, were trans. They live in Abbotsford. They're in the Abbotsford community. They have Abbotsford values. So that, as you say, that just doesn't wash. There is a queer community in Abbotsford.
It's just so crazy that they would even use those words. Or even
say, I don't. Those words came out of many responses, whether it was someone from the board or not. I can't confirm that. I should set that straight. But it definitely was in the messaging that came out.
No pun intended.
Exactly.
Well, I think our guest last week had said that that it was, there's nobody that's GLBT that lives in Abbotsford, so it's really not relevant here, was the words that they used last week, so I'm
those
sure.
were sort of echoed by the, you know, the president of Iran when he visited at Columbia, right, and that spurred so much laughter in the school. That was something controversial. He said, well, there's no gay people in Iran, so, and of course we know that's not true.
Well,
and
it's just,
and the same goes for Abbotsford, and I'm not comparing Abbotsford to the Middle East scenario, but we hear these things now, and they're laughable.
They almost are. They really are, actually, because honestly, I mean, across the board, there's a minimum of 10% born every day that have that particular that have a preference for the same sex, and
trans
is a whole is another 10% actually. So there's a lot of people that have variety and different, you know, diversity, and that's just across the human. Team.
Yeah.
And all of us and across every country.
Absolutely. And the allied youth who are identify as heterosexual and in support of their friends. And, you know, important to include. And that's a huge percentage of the population, especially younger kids. So so people don't realize that sometimes.
So do you think that, like, this, what goes on in Abbotsford, I mean, to me, this was felt so close to home, it just disturbed me to the core. Now, when I hear about these things happening in middle America, I'm not surprised. But when I hear about it happening right in my back door, I'm, you know, my backyard, I'm kind of freaked out a little bit. So do you think that this is an indication of maybe things that are actually percolating in the political climate across North America, pretty much? I mean, if it's happening so close to a metropolitan city where... we're out and proud, and there's no, you know, hidden agendas happening too much, I don't think.
It's a tough question. First of all, it's been my experience that there actually isn't a whole lot of difference between the rural and urban settings when it comes to this issue. Now, with that, I'm talking specifically to youth.
Okay.
Of course... There are some preconceptions about folks who maybe aren't living right in the center of the city and their attitudes and maybe their less exposures to whether it's different people from different cultures and different backgrounds, religions, sexualities, orientations, that sort of thing. However, I think that the experiences of queer youth in the suburbs, in the country, or in the city are parallel. We have very open-minded schools, or very open-minded educators in the Vancouver School Board, for sure. It's been my experience, those people that I interact with, and there's a lot of support there. But at the same time, you know, there are still queer students in the city of Vancouver who are afraid to come out, who don't want that stigma attached to them in the hallway. They just want to fit in, and fitting in for them means not drawing a lot of attention to their sexuality, acting straight, that sort of thing. So the issues, I think, are the same no matter where, and middle America versus Canada. It's a bit tough in Canada because what's going on in California right now with Prop 8 is something that we went through in sort of 2004, 2005, and with gay marriage, it got passed, and it's legal, and it really has died down, and we didn't see much GLBT issues come up in the last federal election. However, we did see arts funding come up, and that's I think definitely an area that's of real interest to the GLBT community, not solely obviously, but definitely with regard to arts and culture funding. That's something that I think the GLBT community holds as a real priority. So in one sense, those issues did come up, but not specific to gay marriage or things like that we saw in the last election.
What was Propaganda 8 again? Just
Prop 8, sorry, yeah. So Proposition 8, Propaganda 8.
Propaganda?
It was just, Propaganda 8 was sort of the bittersweet outcome of Barack Obama's election win. A lot of gay people will tell you in the States, and essentially there are only a few states in the U.S. that have legal gay marriage. That's at a state level, so it's by no means what we've got, the rights we've got here now in Canada. And one of those states, so I would name them, but I'd get one wrong or I'd miss one, and I think there's only one left, I'm not sure, since someone would call in. If somebody knows, they can call in and let us know the states. They can do
the
a little quick,
round.
Do a little Google search. but it's hard to keep up with, and that's what Prop 8 came up about. Essentially, one of the things that's different about the American voting system, as you probably know, is that, one, you vote directly for the president, and two, along with the people you're voting for, there's a whole bunch of other issues on the ballot. Things like, I know my friends in Seattle last election were voting for George Bush or, and then also, should we extend the monorail into downtown Seattle or something? So they have all these sort of odd things that are thrown in on the election ballot. So Prop 8 was in the States, and it was the motion that was put forward to ban the now legal gay marriage. And people voted in support of it, which means that the gay marriages were taken away in this election in California. Something like 37,000 gay and lesbian marriages have been annulled in the last since the election because of this law.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's so tragic.
So yeah, that's happened. So when I say bittersweet, I think everyone was really excited about Obama's victory. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair to say. Even Republicans somehow felt excited. The ones that weren't too far to the right. Yeah, possibly. But at the same time, California, the most populous state and the state where so much media is mm-hmm. based and Hollywood comes out of and the way a lot of us construct our identities.
In
popular culture, mm-hmm. come out of California. So now they've banned gay marriage, and it's the second time. So it was legal at one point. Schwarzenegger put an end to that when he got in. It got legalized again, and now it's out again. So there's a whole bunch of stuff happening there now with regards to human rights complaints and stuff. So that was Proposition 8.
Wow.
Yeah. So that just happened, and
I can't imagine being one of these couples, you know, of the 37,000 couples in love, have their marriage, you know, like anyone else, have had their wedding, and then all of a sudden the state takes it away. Like, I mean, that's just so fucked up. I'm sorry, but...
Well, you know, some people could see the silver lining, which is it is California. Celebrities got married. Ellen DeGeneres got married. She's... People have different views about her, but in my mind, you know, she's gotten a whole segment of people on board that probably normally wouldn't have maybe even thought about sexual orientation in general, but now are in support of it. And I remember when she announced her wedding, I actually caught her show the next morning, and she had like a 10-minute standing ovation from her audience before she could even speak, and it was about this wedding. And so that was something that... So there are celebrities that maybe can come.
Leaders.
Maybe the celebrities can save us. I don't know.
Yeah. But
I'm sure there'll be a fight. You know, Hollywood tends to be a democratic place, mm-hmm. but California is also very populous state with many other folks living there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's disappointing right now, and that's the fight going down south of us.
What about the political climate in Canada? I find it interesting that homosexuality was decriminalized in 1969. I love the 69 by Pierre Trudeau, so I think that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to use your quote that from him. There's no place for the state in the bedrooms of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's cool. And we legalized gay marriage nationwide in 2005. But how do you think in terms of political climate here with the Harper government and all the things that are going on there, how do you think that's going to affect or is affecting?
Wow. Well, there's sort of two questions there, I think.
There is.
The political climate here is... crazy right now, mm-hmm. but very interesting. Very interesting.
Original time.
For an organization like mine, my opinion aside, for an organization like mine, it's less about who's in power. It's more about we are really busy grant writers. We rely on federal funding for our programs. Mm-hmm. We do receive federal funding and organizations like Canada Council have been great to us. We get other funding province-wide and also through private organizations and corporations that we seek out. But so as long as those sort of factions of the government continue to function and tax dollars that I pay, that you guys pay, that we all pay, mm-hmm. are continuing to support positive programs, I think that's important. And that's why I think, you know, I mean, that's what people are blaming Harper's continual or repeat minority elected government on, is that he made this slip with arts and culture. It really resonated with Quebec, who, you know, generally hold the arts and culture up very high.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of lost that province with that cut. Now, of course, at the end, he decided not to, and it was obviously a reaction to kind of an emergency knee-jerk. I don't think that government really realized how important that was, not just to Quebecers, but other Canadians, too.
Mm-hmm. And it makes the world go round. It's not like we can just cut it. People are artists and dancers and singers all over the world, and in Canada, that's their livelihoods. And if you're trying to save the car companies out there, and we're going to be piling all this money into the car companies to keep them alive, and yet you pull money from, the artists and musicians, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, the economic crash sort of happened after all that, and of course now it all just seems ridiculous and make-believe. Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, I can't follow it, and I'm glad that politics is exciting again in Canada, because that was such a snoozer of an election. I mean, we were up against the most incredible U.S. campaign ever, so of course we were all a bit jealous of what was going on south of the border. But with regard to your other question about the climate, the Pierre Trudeau quote, you've started with that. When I'm talking to students in school, I definitely talk about that quote. That Pierre Trudeau is still known, even by kids who were born in 1995. And when I'm in schools, there was kids born in 95 or even later. And
he is also old.
Yeah. And they know Pierre Trudeau. They may not know Brian Mulroney or, Jean Chrétien or whoever, but they know Pierre Trudeau because he really was a charismatic prime minister who is still known throughout history. And that quote about the state not having any business in the bedrooms of Canada is a Trudeauism through and through. And I make sure the students learn that in my presentations, in a way to feel proud about where we're at here. And when we compare ourselves, I think, to some other places, we're not doing badly. Canada has provided more LGBT rights than many other countries in the world. We're not number one, but maybe we are, I don't know.
Top three.
But there's other countries doing good things too. So that's something to be proud of, and it's good that in 69, now if it's funny that it wasn't until 69 until it was decriminalized. I mean, that seems a bit recent even, but it did happen. And so I guess the point is that Trudeau, it still resonates with young people.
Mm-hmm.
And when they study politics in school. And I think that quote comes into a lot of the work, even if the teacher isn't even meaning to address LGBT issues. You can't really talk about Pierre Trudeau's history without including that important step. So that's good.
I do actually, in my master's, I did a lot of studying and reading about places in the curriculum, in the K-12 system, that there are examples of sex, gender, and, relationship and that kind of thing. And now it's so intertwined that all teachers should be given the rights, education to understand how to, take these teachable moments and, utilize them in your classroom to anti-oppress, to queer the curriculum a bit. And by that, I mean to have students understand diversity in all aspects, not just in sexual or gender aspects, but in all aspects. So that was what my whole master's was about. So I did. Cool. I remember reading about that and Pierre Trudeau and these quotes and things. And it's so critical. It's so important that we keep it up. And I know that in the Abbotsford social justice rally, a critical piece there around saving the curriculum to its diversity and how incredibly important that is for all of us. It's not just around sex and gender. It's around everything about being human. So very important fights we're fighting today still, it seems. And with that, I think we should take a little break since it seems to be the right time. Ross, I really appreciate the first half here, and
it's talking to you.
And in the second half, we're going to be continuing with Ross Johnson, an out in schools director of youth education. And we're going to be discussing what they do in the programs, what the programs look like, the out in school programs. We're going to be talking about, what about coming out for teachers, administrators? How do youth come out? How do we support them? What are the teen suicide rates? And also on the dating, since it is a bit of a sex show, we're going to be talking about dating.
And dating's fun.
For GLBT youth as well, and the fabulous things that are happening right here at EBC with the Queer Film Fest and, I guess, queer filmmaking. So we'll be talking about that in the second half.
Gay youth do date. It's exciting.
Yeah. So do stay tuned. You are listening to Juice Box on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. We welcome your calls at 604-822-2487. Thanks for listening.
I Are you looking to fulfill your passion for justice? Join us. The Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter is looking for women volunteers to help us run our 24-hour rape crisis line and transition house for battered women and their children. Training is 6 weeks long and free. Training starts now. Please call to book a training interview. Phone us at 604-872-8212.
Juice Box is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
And we are back in the box.
We're back in Juice Box, and we have our Out in Schools, Ross Johnstone, joining us. I'm trying to figure out
who is the director of education for Out in Screen and Out in Schools.
Thank
it's
you.
Not a very juicy title.
For I think it's thing, pretty cool.
We'll work, I can work on that.
I think it's pretty cool for your young age.
What would you like your title to be then?
Master of Ceremonies. No,
the Harvey Milk.
Okay,
we can stick with director.
On that note, when just on our break, we're talking about, we've got a juice berry.
Before we get back into our interview, yes, which has been riveting, and I'm looking forward to the second half, I just want to mention quickly, Caroline and I are going to be checking this out, and we recommend that you do too if you're interested. In the Woman Abuse Response Program at BC Women's Hospital is hosting a two-day workshop January 12th and 13th, and it's about the links between violence against women, substance use, and mental ill health. This workshop will provide the opportunity to explore how these issues intersect to create risks to women's health and safety and add barriers to accessing services. So if you want to be an attendee, you have the opportunity to share your perspectives and experiences on challenges and barriers that you have in service delivery. And they'll also be making recommendations on how to develop an integrated provincial approach to improve services for women impacted by these issues. And that's mental health, substance use, and violence against women. Anyone working in the health, addictions, mental health, or anti-violence sector are welcome. Please sign up. The workshop will be held at BC Women's Hospital. Contact Alexa at 604-875-3717, or you can email Alexa at aajoude, and that's at cw.bc.ca for more information. 604-875-3717, and her name is Alexa. So, and Caroline and I are going to check that out as well.
I think it's going to be really exciting.
January 12th and 13th next year. Do sign up. There's limited numbers, and it's actually very reasonable. We can't tell you how much, but it's quite cheap. So if you're interested. Anyway, okay. So back to our interview, and what was that song?
Oh, that was Freedom by George Michael, which I thought was very appropriate.
Yes, for today's topic.
Which on that note, when we are on our break and we were listening to Freedom, we were also talking about the fact that you worked at an all-gay school in New York.
Yeah, well, I've done workshops at the school. So the school's named the Harvey Milk High School.
Which we love.
Which we love, yeah. And it's part of what's called the Hedrick Martin Institute. And I've brought the Out in Schools program there several times and done workshops with the youth there. Essentially what it is it's a school in New York City that is for GLBT teens who need some help. It's an alternate school. So it might be that they have been kicked out of their homes, and it could be anything from having to, you know, need support, need housing, that kind of thing, and therefore dropping out of school at some point happened along the line, and they're getting back. The goal of the school is ultimately to get everybody graduated. In 2004, the school got accreditation from the New York City School Board. It was a private school until then, and it was accredited under the New York City School Board.
That's great.
It was great. There was huge protests on the first day of school. There's an awesome film called Follow My Voice, which is done, which is all... It's sort of a really neat documentary that is about making the soundtrack to the music to the movie Hedwig. Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Yeah, John Cameron Mitchell, the director of Hedwig, decided they made a tribute album, and on that album is The Breeders, Rufus Wainwright, Cyndi Lauper, Yoko Ono, and many other great names. And they appear in the documentary. All the proceeds of the CD are still going towards supporting the Harvey Milk School, so it's a fundraiser.
Great.
And that's actually how I learned about the school. So we showed that film at the Vancouver Queer Film Festival and learned about the school, got in touch. And when I've gone to New York, I've done presentations there. It's amazing. The students there are incredible. They're lovely, lovely students. And they're getting an education where they're safe, which
Very
is
important.
Most important.
So important. And just so people that are just tuning in about Harvey Milk, it's a movie that's out right now. Maybe, Ross, you could speak to about what...
Sure, yeah. So Harvey Milk was, really briefly, was the first gay, openly gay politician in the United States. He was a supervisor in San Francisco, in city of San Francisco, in late 70s, and he had an amazing career and was assassinated. Him and the mayor of San Francisco at the time were assassinated by their colleague, who was also another supervisor. The film that is out now is called Milk, and it stars Sean Penn as Harvey Milk, and which is a really interesting casting, and it works really well. And it's a it's by Gus Van Sant, who's done some other great films. Elephant comes to mind. There's a whole list. Google.
Even Cowgirl Gets the Blues.
Yeah, lots of great stuff. I'm a big fan. And so it's amazing that this film has hit the theaters. And
mainstream.
Mainstream theaters, yeah. So it's out there. It's ironic that it comes out just as Proposition 8 that we talked about earlier got voted to be accepted. The film really focuses on Harvey Milk's struggle in the 70s against Proposition 6, which was the law being put in place to take gay teachers out of classrooms in California in the 70s. Harvey Milk fought against it and won.
Big time, yeah.
And it's ironic that was 1978, so 30 years to the day almost.
The film comes out.
The struggle in California with Prop 8 comes into play, and we're protesting in Abbotsford.
Again,
so it's coming full circle slightly. You know, of course, we've progressed. So it's the story of Harvey Milk. There's also a great documentary called The Times of Harvey Milk, which we showed as a fundraiser last week, the day before the Hollywood film came out. Hollywood. The Gus Van Sant film came out. I should never have said that.
Put Gus with
Please
Hollywood.
Forgive me. It's basically the original documentary that was done in 1983, and awesome. It fills in sort of gaps that you might not get from the Milk film, and vice versa. Actually, they complement each other really well. And the Milk film with Sean Penn actually has some of the original footage from the documentary. And you probably get that at an alternate video store, but you can definitely get it at the Vancouver Public Library. But you have to get on the waiting list.
So in terms of out in schools, why don't you tell us a bit about what the programs are like?
Sure. Yeah, great. Essentially, out in schools is a unique program. As far as we know, we're the only ones doing it, at least around here. And I'm sure there's some programs elsewhere, but not that I've not sort of exactly like we do it. What we do is we're a branch of Out on Screen, who runs the Vancouver Queer Film Festival, amongst other things. It's also the Queer History Project and, of course, Out in Schools. And basically, we are filling the curriculum gap. There is no mandatory GLBT education in BC schools. Students are not talking about this stuff. They don't get the opportunity to talk about GLBT issues in a mature adult way. It's often a derogatory conversation happening in the cafeteria or after school. So we're filling a gap that isn't there. And the way we're doing it is we're using film, we're using independent film and often youth-made independent film on queer issues, and we're bringing those into the classroom, into the auditoriums at schools, and we're following those films up with facilitated discussion around the issues and a bit of a presentation on things like queer histories, terminologies, appropriate, inappropriate language. There's a real big push on the sort of That's So Gay campaign going on right now. It's sort of coming to vogue again as a thing that young people say, whippersnappers, and a real campaign to try and sort of change that. So all this kind of stuff. We use film. We think film's really engaging. We talked about how media savvy kids are earlier, and indeed, you have to keep kids engaged, and when everyone's got an iPhone and they can just as easily watch
ADD.
Family Guy and pretend to pay attention to, you've got to really get some good stuff in there. So the film works great.
I would think that any kind of sex talk usually gets them engaged, because as a sex educator in the schools, which I actually fill the curriculum gap by always making sure I don't ever tell them I'm going to, usually, the teachers, because sometimes I won't, and we'll talk about this later on, actually, if we get time to, but I often don't mention it in my proposals to schools. I'll say, you know, that I'm speaking to the curriculum and I do all this stuff and this is what I'm going to think, and then I always slide in the queer information and all that as well, just in case, because I once I'm in there, I'm accepted. I always get invited back every year. So important to have it be in the classroom, I think. So I often don't.
Good work.
I think it's interesting too that using film as a tool. I think it's lovely.
Yeah, I was going to say the film. I should bring some film in, because I think that would be a really powerful way of doing
it. It works quite nicely. I know in the downtown east side, I run a charity as well when I'm not doing this. It's called Beauty Night. And we actually will show things like...
Yeah,
okay,
I think
it's my
great.
Baby.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But we've done things like watch The Devil Wears Prada, for example, and then actually facilitate a discussion afterwards about workplace, what is proper, what is not proper, what you should put up with, what you shouldn't. And I know that that's worked quite nicely. We use something to entertain and engage, because people get 90% of their information from what they see,
awesome.
And 10% from what they hear. So I think I applaud you for doing that. I think it's great.
Thank you. Yeah, it works great. People go to see movies, people watch TV. Mm-hmm. That is where we're getting the bulk of our information. If I poll a group, you know, the amount of times things like The Hills comes up as like a, you know, something that is watched constantly, and I must say I watch myself, so I understand that. That works. There is a sub-goal to our program, which is... not totally focused on LGBT issues. The goal is to get youth excited about art and film as a way to express themselves, as a way to be active. And so the films work for that, especially the youth-made films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we first started out with the program 4 years ago, I often shied away from kind of low-budgety camcorder-type shot stuff where a youth would... I would play it, but it... at more of an intimate setting. If I was in an auditorium with 300 kids, I thought all they want to see is whatever's playing at Silver City, Richmond, or Silver City, Coquitlam, and they don't care about something that's low budget. And in fact, after a bit of experimenting, I learned the opposite. They're actually more engaged when they learn the person's 16, and this is their story. And it's a 10-minute short film. It resonates with them. It also then encourages them to pick up a camera, pick up their cell phone now and film on it. Like, you've got to, you know, there are film festivals online that are all cell phone footage, and even our news is cell phone footage now, so it's at the tip of their fingers. You know, it doesn't cost $5,000 anymore to buy a camcorder and buy some videotape and all suite. You can download it.
Well, good for you for noticing that and assessing your teaching tools and changing things up. I mean, that's
we're always
really
tweaking
powerful.
The program constantly based on the student feedback.
How are you finding with the internet? And as you're mentioning now, you can actually play things that's on the news in terms of using cell phones and things like that. How is social media helping you in terms of
that? It's totally helping. And of course, there's the fear that there's the other side of the internet, which we can talk about. But as far as the sort of social networking side is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
We, you know, outside of the program, we also do some other things, like we throw events for youth. Whether that's at our film festival in August or whether that's year-round. An example would be Youth Week happens the first week in May, and every year we team up with GAB Youth Services, which is run out of the center. It's a drop-in for queer youth. And we put on an open mic talent show variety show that's all youth-coordinated, and it's a great night of just performance.
Mm-hmm.
And the youth who are really interested in showing off the talent come, and there's so much support, and the crowd's great. And we had, like, a way over-capacity crowd at Rhizome last year, and then another capacity crowd at our festival this year. We had directors in from New York for one of the films to kind of watch. We kind of themed the performance around their film that showed, which was called Where the World Minds. So without going on too much of a tangent, the social networking side, that's how you get invite people out. Put the Facebook group out. It works. Post the videos after. Post the photos after. Everyone wants to see themselves and share those photos around. So I think it's been amazing to get people organized. In Vancouver, we have a GSA network. A GSA is the Gay Straight Alliances, and
mm-hmm.
those are important in schools, and we work very close with them. Almost every Vancouver school board high school has a Gay Straight Alliance, and more are popping up in the suburban boards all the time and even in the rural boards. And they're supported by groups like EGAL, who have done lots of surveys on them. EGAL is a great advocacy group for gay and lesbians in Canada. They released a survey this year that you can check on their website. That's all about polling youth about how they feel about being gay youth and safety in their schools. Lots of surprising and unsurprising statistics came out of that. I think for me, it wasn't
what
too
was...
much of a shock because I'm used to knowing where kids are. But some of the statistics were indeed things like let's say 70% of queer youth don't feel safe in their schools. They feel their schools are not safe. 70%.
70%.
So
70. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's
so that's
scary.
Most. That's most, and that's due simply to the bullying that's based on their orientation alone, no other
mm-hmm.
type of bullying. Bullying and suicide are important issues for all students, but in particular, queer youth are 1 in 4 times more likely to commit suicide than heterosexual youth based on the bullying they feel. That came out of this study as well. There's lots of information on there.
4 times more likely to commit suicide than straight students, and 1 in 4 are physically harassed due to their orientation. It's just,
yeah.
I mean, they're just staggering, these statistics. It's really, like, if you think about the climate of your child who perhaps, may or may not be gay, you don't even know yet, and you can imagine the suffering that's going on with that young person trying to find its way,
mm-hmm.
her or his way in the world, and of course having to perform in school at the same time and it's just staggering. My heart just goes out to them, and I think there's suicide rates happening all over the place. Like, I just, at school in North Van, one of my clients had a suicide last week, and it's just happening still all the time. And I'm wondering, out in schools is part of helping reduce this bullying and educate, right? Because without the education, what happens?
Well, yeah, I mean, our mission is to engage youth through film in order to make schools safer,
mm-hmm.
free from homophobia and bullying. And that's ultimately our goal, and there is lots of work to be done. The point for me is what's most important is these statistics exist. They're based on LGBT youth in schools, and this is the curriculum that doesn't exist. Again, from the very first time we started talking tonight, if we're not talking about these issues, then we're not going to help these issues. So if it's not being included in the curriculum, then these stats aren't going to change.
And I think what's really exciting about technology these days, like you said, you can shoot a video on your cell phone.
Yeah.
More people are being able to tell their stories. And I think it's going to make a difference. And hopefully if people are talking about things, like you said, it gets, hopefully, alleviate and educate.
It's a really good way for people to rally things like Facebook and YouTube and all that stuff. great way for people to rally around an issue and get people organized.
You've got a film project coming up, don't you, in terms of some education in March, isn't it not, at UBC?
Yes, March break of this year, we're offering a filmmaking boot camp for LGBT youth, and the boot camp is going to be co-run with a group called Real Youth, who's an awesome organization based in Vancouver. They provide filmmaking workshops based on social justice issues for young people, and they do that here in Vancouver, they do that throughout BC, and they do that in Nepal and India and all sorts of things. So they sought us out because they hadn't actually had any LGBT content. We've done a few animation workshops with them. We said, let's do filmmaking boot camp. So we're going to do it at UBC. UBC's offered to sponsor us a venue and also provide a screening for friends and family, sort of a gala affair.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so learn how to make your first film from day one through to day five, and then we'll screen those at our festival, we'll screen them in the Out in Schools program at schools, and they'll travel across North America at different festivals as well.
And that would be a great place to meet people, wouldn't it, in terms of dating?
Yes, absolutely. In the last few minutes, I want to talk about dating for LGBT youth.
What's a good way of telling whether somebody is gay or straight, besides coming right out and asking them?
Well, you can come out and ask somebody, but I think the best thing for youth right now who are questioning their orientation or know their orientation but aren't sure where to meet people is take advantage of all these resources that are available. I'm going to plug our website for a sec, outinschools.com. On outinschools.com, there is a section called resources, and in there is a whole bunch of groups that are doing stuff in the Lower Mainland and throughout BC with regard to drop-ins, queer proms and dances. I was a chaperone at the queer prom for the last 2 years.
Nice.
400 kids showed up. Wow. I felt totally old and unstylish. Like, these were hip kids, and they loved it. They love meeting folks. And then through that, they end up exchanging numbers, getting involved in some of the numerous other activities that happen throughout Vancouver. So there is lots going on for LGBT youth in this city, and it's just a matter of getting to the first event, and then your day timer will be full, I guarantee you, for the rest of the year.
It's nice to have your dance card full.
Absolutely.
That'd be great. What else is in the future for Out in Schools?
The biggest thing right now is that we have developed a teaching a resource package for teachers and students. Basically, in essence, it's trying to package our program a bit for students to use themselves. That's something that teachers will be able to deliver themselves in the classroom should we not be able to get there. I'm thinking places up north that are hard to reach. We do get a lot of interest from rural BC. Of course, our goal is still to deliver that. So that's coming down the pipeline. It should be available in January or February.
We're
lobbying the Ministry of Education to have that included in the Planning 10 curriculum, a mandatory class for all grade 10 students in BC. So we'll see how that goes. And that's a bit of a long process, but we're definitely working on that.
Wow. I'm like, I missed that whole thing. mandatory class in Planning 10 regarding?
Well, Planning 10 is a class in BC that's a health and career planning course, mandatory for all grade 10 students. Based on feedback from an advisory group we organized and working with teachers and working with students and polling people as much as we could, the information we gathered was that that is the best place for Out in Schools to be included in the curriculum. We're going to lobby the ministry over the next few months to have our learning resource package included.
Right. Excellent.
I hope the lobbying goes well. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, that's where I go into the schools as well and try to get one or two classes to cover all of the sex ed curriculum.
Sure.
You could imagine sex and gender education, including queer education, in two classes, which is just absurd to me. But anyway, so much to learn, and it's so much about every part of our aspects of being human. You know, when they expect you to cover it in two classes, it's just absurd. Anyway, so you and I are in direct competition, which is fabulous.
Great.
And it's wonderful. If you get that going on, then at least, you know, that means I might only have one class left, but it's at least something that's mandatory that, you know, I can dovetail, or any other sex educator that's doing, you know, the body science stuff, the safety, like, you know, the